Today on the show, we sit down with lost Pokemon expert Dr. Lava to discuss how a Pokemon's connection to the world can alter its appearance and abilities.
Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Lawrence.
I'm not a morning person, but I'm Bruce, also.
And we're joined today by a very special guest.
From all the way from halfway across the world.
And our resident expert on lost Pokemon, Dr. Lava.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you here.
Super glad. Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
First of all, I should mention, I live here in China, so hopefully there won't be any internet disruptions. But I guess you could call me like either a journalist or a Pokemon historian, one or the other, maybe a little bit of both. A big part of what I do is I find old Japanese magazines or books and have them or segments translated from Japanese into English. Which uncover some new information about. I'm particularly interested in the development of Pokemon games, how things, Pokemon origins or things that were cut, in particular things that, were planned to be in this game or that Pokemon game, but for one reason or another was cut, why it was cut, whose decision, and also just all kinds of stuff to do with development, how things could have gone a different way, who made what decision that took things in a different direction, and just kind of that sort of thing. In addition to doing my own thing with the translations, I also try to kind of just report on what everyone else is doing.
And I have to say, I am absolutely starstruck to be speaking with you. I've been following your Twitter account for a better half of last year, since my girlfriend introduced me to your Twitter account. Were you talking about the lost proto Pokemon? I've been just following ever since. Love all the updates that you give.
Oh, thanks. I mean, a lot of 99% of the lost Pokemon are other people's discoveries. I a lot of the time just try to, sometimes I'll commission new artwork or something like that. And sometimes I don't really do anything. I just kind of report on stuff that happened years ago. So I appreciate you saying that, but in many cases, I'm sort of standing on the shoulders of giants, I think is the expression. So I can't take credit for the work of lots of other people who came before me and are working right now while I'm slacking off talking to you guys.
Well, it's still great to have you.
Yeah, definitely. Like, to echo Bruce, I actually discovered your Twitter account because I saw Bruce liking some posts on Twitter. So that's how, like, I got in. I didn't realize there was actually this whole world of lost Pokemon. So it's been a journey and I like it. I think just to go off a little bit more, my favorite Pokemon that's been posted has probably been the lost evolution of Raichu.
Oh my God, he looks awesome.
He's a good one for sure. I think I like the lost shark Pokemon from Gen 2, Akari. I don't know if you've seen that one.
With the anchor chain?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one with the anchor for a tail.
Oh yeah, I like that one. That's definitely my top five.
Oh yeah, like it really just boggles my mind of just how much is left on the cutting room floor.
Right.
Yeah, the first two generations especially there's stuff all over the place, but particularly in the first two generations, I guess you could say Game Freak was, can I swear on this show? Well, yeah, they didn't have their stuff together as much as they did later. So they ended up, throwing a lot of things at the wall. Some stuff stuck, some didn't. They had to cut it for one reason or another. And so the first two generations in particular have a real wealth of cut content, a lot of which has been discovered and a lot is undiscovered. And there's even still a lot that's still in the hands of, well, depending on who you ask, some people would say that they're hoarders, people that have these assets or these sprites, things like that. Some people hate, like I said, the proto Pokemon community is pretty fractured. So there's still stuff in private hands outside of Game Freak that's not in the public. Some people call those hoarders. They some other times they call them preservationists. Other times they're just still doing more research or verifying. It's really kind of depending on who you ask. But there's still a lot more out there in private hands and as well locked away in Game Freak or the Pokemon Company's vaults. So yeah, it's a really great time to be kind of in the Pokemon prototype community because it's really been pretty active. There's been a lot of stuff happening the last 2 or 3 years. So it's been a good time.
And I think it kind of fits into the kind of the topic of today's episode. You know, we wanted to focus on, I don't necessarily know if we would call these like proto Pokemon, but these are definitely different variants of existing Pokemon that have popped up in different games. But they're not like a part of the Pokedex. They're pretty much just like variant forms that are outside of what we would normally view as like an actual new Pokemon.
I think what we've got on the docket here today, you sent me what you want to talk about, the kind of like shadow Pokemon primals, I guess like side game exclusive Pokemon. And also there's some like a manga exclusive, movie exclusive, some other Pokemon who I guess some people might say they're non-canon. Other people would disagree with that, but yeah, Pokemon who exist, but officially exist, and they were in officially released material, but never appeared in a mainline game. I think that's what we're going to chat about today, right?
Exactly.
Yes. And so, yeah, just for people who are listening that might not be familiar, we'll just kind of give a quick rundown of what Shadow and Primal Pokemon are. So I did a little bit of research on Shadow Pokemon, so I'll start with that.
And I did Primal Pokemon.
Yeah, so what I've found from my research and some of the games that I've played is their Shadow Pokemon are created when a Pokemon go through a process where their like emotions are sealed off. And it comes in a few different stages. So you have like just your typical Shadow Pokemon. They go through an undisclosed process that was created by Cypher. And there's just like this kind of dark aura around them. And then you have your next stage, which was what we saw in, I think it was Pokemon XD with Shadow Lugia, where they kind of perfected that process and it was still Lugia, but the form of the Pokemon actually changed from what we saw from the standard Lugia.
With a white and blue.
Yeah. It turned like pure black and has red eyes and it still maintains the aura. And it was like you could normally go through a process of purifying Pokemon and they'll go back to normal. This was made so it was supposed to not be able to be purified, but they were able to do it anyways in the game. And like then there's the third, we find actually recently there's a third way that a Pokemon can become a Shadow Pokemon. Which this is probably to most people won't seem canon because it comes from the Pokken tournament game. So we see that there's Shadow Mewtwo in the game. And by playing the game, we find out that Mewtwo became Shadow Mewtwo by interacting with the Shadow, was it Sync Energy Stone or something? While protecting someone else from the effects of the stone. So it seems like there's a man-made way to become a Shadow Pokemon, and then there's an actual natural way for a Pokemon to become Shadow Pokemon.
So I'm not really familiar with just this game, never really played it, but can you tell me, is there a huge difference between the artificial shadowing of a Pokemon and the natural way?
I see the problem is the artificial way, it's like undisclosed. It's just a method that Cypher had for kind of closing off the emotions of Pokemon. I think the effects are still the same. Like the Pokemon, they kind of like lose that the friendly aspect and they're more powerful and more like feral. They could be related. They just haven't made that connection since Pokken is more of like a Tekken-inspired game. And even though Shadow Mewtwo appeared in that game, there has been like a lot of there are a lot of people that just don't view it as being like a real canon Pokemon. I, for one, though, disagree.
Of course. Dr. Lava, did you have anything to add?
No, actually, this is when you sent me the script, we talked about this before we started recording. You know, I mostly hunt down rare information. So there are many instances where there's commonly known information that I have no idea about. So probably a lot of the listeners are like, oh, I know how a shadow Pokemon is created. But honestly, that's something I didn't play Colosseum or Gale of Darkness. I've read interviews. I've even talked to some of the developers, but I never actually played the game. I'm kind of exposing myself as a little bit of a pokey poser here. But
No.
The next group of Pokemon that we want to cover is we'll cover Primal Pokemon. And Brees, you did some research on that.
Yeah, so I did a lot of research on this, found some things within myself and on the internet. This one's a lot more disjointed than Shadow Pokemon because, you know, Shadow Pokemon have their distinct features and everything. From what I found, there's some differences, but they all kind of have the same characteristics as Primal Pokemon. What we know the most about it is through Pokemon Alpha Sapphire and Omega Ruby with Primal Groudon and Kyogre, where, you know, these are just remakes of Ruby and Sapphire, but in this one you have these legendary Pokemon Kyogre and Groudon who go through a process called Primal Reversion, which is said to restore a Pokemon's true powers as it absorbs the energy of nature to greatly increase its power. So it's sort of like Shadow Transformation, except this one kind of, I wouldn't want to say this exactly, but de-evolves them. They lose a lot of their cognitive abilities and just revert to this screaming, rampaging mass of just anger and destruction. They become much, much more powerful, but they lose their logic and reasoning and just any sort of peacefulness.
So just based off of the information you've given, it's more of like a, did you say it's like more naturally occurring? Because like, yes. I think that there's a little bit of, there's some similarity between the two. It just seems like kind of Primal Pokemon are more powerful. Like, I don't think that Shadow Pokemon are reverting back to their true strength. I think they're just kind of losing that, like, kind of maybe friendlier connection that they have to, like, people and other Pokemon that where they may actually be holding back in battle, where Primal seems like it's more of like a naturally occurring effect, and a Pokemon's just gonna just probably rampage out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter like who was its friend, who it is beside, it indiscriminately just lashes out. Its only goal right now is self-preservation, making sure that no one touches it. So we see this through, of course, the Primal Groudon and Kyogre. But we see this kind of before then, as how I would kind of put it as proto-primal, where we kind of see first through a game that I play, which was Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Time, where you're like a little Pokemon yourself and you go on these adventures. The boss at the end of that game was a Pokemon called Primal Dialga, which is the time legendary Pokemon in Pokemon Diamond, where at the Temporal Tower, Time Gears are stolen, which in some way is connected to, of course, the Time Legendary, to transform it into Primal Dialga, where it has this light coming out of the creases of its skin, much like the Primal Groudon and Kyogre do, and it just rampages everywhere. A thing that I did find, though, is that it's not called that in its original Japanese language. In the Japanese language, in that game, it's not called Primal Dialga, it's called Dark Dialga. However, the characteristics of a Primal Pokemon still exist within that. It's very strange. I don't know, Dr. Lava, if you have any kind of explanation.
Well, yeah, it is a little bit complicated. I don't speak Japanese. I said something earlier about have these magazines and books translated. Actually, I pay for those, and sometimes people volunteer. But I don't speak Japanese, but I do have things explained to me by Japanese people sometimes. The Primal Dialga, as well as Shadow Mewtwo and Shadow Lugia in Japanese, are all called Dark. So you got Dark Lugia, Dark Mewtwo, and Dark Dialga. Although the it's actually written differently for Dark Dialga. So Mewtwo and Lugia are both the same word for dark. There's another word for it's written differently for Dark Dialga. So they're not actually connected, but they are. Those are all three called Dark, and thus Primal Dialga is not in Japanese. It has no relation to the Omega Ruby Sapphire, Alpha Sapphire primals. And not in Japanese. It was kind of like a weird, I guess you could say, coincidence that years before Oris, they had, in the English translation, they had Primal Dialga, and then later that ended up being, in Japanese, these primal legendaries in Gen 6. And then, so when they translated to English, they kept it as primal, but then you had this kind of awkward situation where they'd accidentally changed the name in English before for Dialga, and it's a bit of a mess, the primals, the darks, the shadows, but they are, yeah, in Japan, not connected by all three being primals. I did not play any of the PMD games. I was more of a Ranger fan myself. So now this gives me an excuse to talk about Pokemon Ranger a little bit, because it had Ukulele Pichu. Did y'all play any of the Ranger games?
I have not. I wanted to, but I was not exactly sure what even happens in there.
It's pretty good. It's probably not for every Pokemon fan, because it's pretty far out there. You do catch Pokemon, but it's with a it's by circling them with a stylus, not by battling them. But it is really fun, and the thing that really makes the Ranger games, for me at least, really special is that so you have all your Pokemon follow you. They're not in Pokeballs, and then you'll get to a situation like there's a fallen log in your way. You'll use like a fire Pokemon to burn up the log, so then you can progress. And then you'll get somewhere where there's like, some vines blocking your way. You'll use like a Sceptile or something to cut the vines so you can progress. So it's always fun to be able to use Pokemon to interact with the world around you, to burn stuff down, to cut things down. And they all follow you as well. So it's really kind of like the Pokemon really feel more like a part of the world. But just a quick detour here. There was, since we're talking about side game exclusives, in Ranger 3, there was your partner Pokemon is a Ukulele Pichu, which is basically just a Pichu that plays a ukulele, although I think it's sort of meant to be its own variant in a way. I don't think it's supposed to be just a Pichu with ukulele. It's a special ukulele Pichu who plays the ukulele and has special ukulele powers.
Ukulele powers?
Well, it's like he can use his ukulele to help you catch other Pokemon, basically. And there's
so like a music soothes the savage beast kind of deal.
Yeah, he's got like musical powers emanating from his ukulele. And he also appeared in the Pokemon Ranger anime specials, as well as in the manga. So just turned 10 years old about a month ago, which was the 10-year anniversary of Ranger 3.
I like that.
I have to check this out now. So it's funny, too, because I think like connecting like Ukulele Pikachu to Primal Dialga and even some of the Shadow Pokemon that we've discussed, like it seems like there are it seems like there are kind of these maybe either special items or like special circumstances that Pokemon go through in the Pokemon world that like, I guess, give them these like heightened abilities or new powers. Cause like a standard Pichu isn't going to be able to do anything with a ukulele, but you know, we have this one here that has the ability to soothe kind of the savage beasts or like these special abilities that are granted. And then you have Primal Dialga came about because those time gears were stolen.
Right.
And then you have Shadow Mewtwo, who came in contact with the that special stone and, you know, became Shadow Mewtwo.
Well, actually, speaking of the Pikachu family, I have one last example. And this one's just through the anime Pokemon Advanced Generation series. First aired, checking my notes here, in 2004 in Japan, 2005 in US, where Pikachu, Ash's Pikachu, accidentally absorbs the blue orb that is usually meant for, I believe, Groudon in the anime, or I believe Kyogre. I get conflicting results when I look this up. Anyway, it undergoes some sort of proto-transformation where it gets the lines from either of those two legendaries, and it's colloquially known as Primal Pikachu, where it also goes through this rampage and does not care about Ash and pretty much has all the characteristics of primal aversion, but again, does not, you know, is not recognized as a Pokemon that is canonically going through primal aversion.
Yeah, that was the one thing you sent me on the episode outline earlier today. I was looking at it. I was like, Primal Pikachu? Like, I've never heard of that. I Googled it.
I remember watching that when I was a kid, and I was just like, whoa.
Okay, I never heard of it. I was looking at images on Google, and I was like, are these fan-made? Did someone Photoshop the anime? Because I was like, do these guys get suckered in by some crappy wiki site? Because I was really unsure if that was a real thing or not. If you saw it on TV then.
Oh, no, yeah. Like, you know, I'll take your word at first, for it. I was remembering it. Like, I thought it was a dream, but I looked it up, and there's like a scene of it. The episode is called Gaining Groudon. It's like a two-parter where, like, first Pikachu is transformed. I know, right? The first episode is where when he's transformed and, like, going through rampaging, electrocuting anything in his sight. And the second form is Ash doing his Ash thing where he's just going to hug Pikachu until Pikachu doesn't want to kill him anymore.
Absorbing all of the electricity that would normally just fry.
That kid's made out of rubber. I don't know.
That is crazy. When you told me about that, I was like, I do not remember that episode at all.
No one would have.
You probably watched that Porygon Cyber Soldier episode and had a seizure and imagined that you saw Primal Pikachu. Or the Mandela
Maybe,
effect,
I don't
one
know.
Or the other.
Because I've never heard of this episode, but I went back and looked it up after you told me about it, and I was like, yeah, it's crazy. So
sure enough. But I really do enjoy all of these spin-off games where the developers and the directors can be able to kind of flex some more creative muscles in creating some of these alternate forms, even though some of them might be just throwaway Pokemon that will never see the light of day again and will be the fever dream of a 12-year-old for most of their adult life until they go back to a podcast where they talk about it. But it really does.
You just lost about 20% of your listeners when you use the phrase throwaway Pokemon.
Right.
No, to them, they like, I feel like, you know, this is a Pokemon that is, I think, really interesting, but doesn't seem to show up anywhere. But I really like how unique they are and could only imagine what, you know, this could be like in any main games where they like sew those into them. I feel like it's so interesting, some of these different transformations and alterations that we see in these different games. Like, I would love to catch or even train or just get like a mystery gift event only ukulele Pichu.
Yeah, they need to bring that back. I'm actually super, I want to see ukulele Pikachu. I'm probably going to look that up.
There's a little bit more. There's another Pichu thing we could talk about that wasn't in the outline, actually, if you guys want to go on another detour.
Why not? We got time.
Right, detour away.
I don't know if you guys played Heart Gold, Soul Silver.
Yes.
That was actually probably, I think it's probably the best games in the series.
Quite possibly, yeah.
But there was an event Pokemon called Spiky Eared Pichu, which, do you guys remember that?
Was that the one who was either... Okay, there's several I'm thinking of. There's one that was like a rival to Pikachu. Or do you mean there the was, one that's a glitch?
No, it's a real thing. It's not a glitch. Got its own unique sprite in Heart Gold Soul Silver. It's got its own lore. It's got its own voice actor even in the anime. And it was kind of a big thing, although it was a special event Pokemon that was hard to get, but it kind of got around. In fact, it's even a alternate Pichu skin in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is Spiky Eared Pichu. But it's not a super well-known, it's not a side game exclusive, but it's a Heart Gold Soul Silver exclusive because it was an event-only Pokemon, but its lore is that it traveled through time with Celebi, and that's how you encounter it in Heart Gold. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It can only be female, and its nature can only be naughty. Take from that what you will. But you take it after you encounter it. You a little bit later, you talk to Professor Elm, and he's like, "Oh, this Pichu's been traveling through time with Celebi, but it traveled too long in time, and so it's I'm not going to be able to directly quote him, but basically he says something like, "Oh, it's lost its reproductive abilities, and it can't be traded to any other game or Poke transferred." So in other words, it's stuck. Yeah, it can't breed, it can't evolve, it can't be traded or Poke transferred. So in other words, it can never leave your copy of Heart Gold Soul Silver once it gets into it. And thus, Spiky Eared Pichu was obtained in any other Pokemon game. Smash Brothers Ultimate is kind of unique in that it also appeared there. It's kind of trapped in time, you know, the time traveling Pichu's trapped in time and Gen 4 forever. And there's kind of, I worked together with a guy I want to shout out, Degasu's Backpack, who's an American living in Japan. He's been covering, I guess you could say, the Japan side of the series for over 20 years at this point. Wow. A really, really prolific guy. I worked together with him a little while back to work on a project. So there's a woman who's a voice actress in Japan. Is her name slipping my mind? Shoku Nakagawa, I want to say. I think that's right. And she does a voice of Spiky Eared Pichu and in the anime and in the movies. And she said that, so me and Degasu got a hold of her biography and translated part of it, where she was saying that Spiky Eared Pichu was chosen because of typos that she makes on her blog, where she tries to say things like mega cool or super cool or mega this, super that. But she often makes a typo that basically, if you translate it, is the word spiky. And so she's accidentally always saying spiky on her blog, and she's kind of sort of like a spokesperson for Pokemon in a way. And so they ended up making Spiky Eared Pichu based on her typos. And then, she ended up being the voice actress for Spiky Eared Pichu. But she also said, this is kind of the interesting part, she said in her biography that they were originally going to make Spiky Eared Pichu. Instead, it was going to be a white Pichu. And there's even a picture of her at an exhibition where there was like a no photography zone, where they had some... They had some concept art of different kind of Pichus that they had considered, including white Pichu, along with some other ones. The resolution is too low to really make out what the other ones are in detail. They're wearing some like things like a mummy Pichu, maybe, but it's hard to make out. But basically, she said they were originally going to make it white Pichu, and they were even going to make some white stew merchandising, because the word for white stew and white Pichu is really similar in Japanese. But she got a photo taken in this no photo zone because she's a celebrity, a Pokemon celebrity, and she posted it on Twitter which is the only known
of course.
Photograph of that white Pichu concept art. And she also, in her book, kind of went on. She sometimes accidentally leaks stuff. Originally Spiky Ear Pichu was going to be white Pichu, and there's going to be merchandise with white stew. And I think she didn't say this, but it sounds like she pushed for it to be changed to Spiky Ear Pichu because she liked the whole thing with the typos, and she wanted people to say it was made because of my typos. And so I think that's probably why they changed it. She doesn't say this explicitly, but yeah, Spiky Ear Pichu is kind of interesting because of the fact it's trapped in time, and it's kind of further made more interesting by the fact it was going to be white Pichu and the story with Shoku and the no photo zone and all that. So I just want to take things on that little detour.
Wow.
No, that's actually super interesting.
So I know this is not the main takeaway, but does that mean in the Pokemon universe, canonically, time travel makes you sterile?
Sounds like it.
That's I think so. Well, Celebi can't reproduce. Spiky Ear Pichus would normally be able to reproduce, and it can't. So it sounds like, yeah, I think you're right. Time travel makes you sterile.
Yeah, time travel is not good if you want to have kids. If there's one takeaway from this episode, it's that.
Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode with Dr. Lava. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.